We interrupt our program to bring you this important message.
Where have you been, man? Huh? I've been calling you. I've been texting you. I emailed you, like, on your Hotmail account. And I, man, nothing. And then I check my messages, and it looks like you've been leaving voicemails for me. And yet...
Who is this?
Hey, I'm BC, man. Hey, Skeet, nice to meet you. You know, it seems like we like music, and we got similar backgrounds. We should probably do something cool and original and start a podcast. What do you think?
I think we should start a podcast today.
Today? Hey, dude, it's only been like 3 months or something.
Yeah,
crazy.
What happened, man? I mean, I think I just went to bed, and then I woke up 3 months later.
Right. That's what it feels like. It actually feels like we weren't like a lot of time hadn't passed, and then all of a sudden it had. Yeah. So obviously it feels like our worlds have been really, really active. We had a lot of stuff going on. We kind of knew ahead of time that this type of thing would happen with work and life and all that. So we apologize for like the long break, but if we were really cool, we'd be like, oh, this is season two. We were just taking a break, right?
Yeah, that's exactly it. Yeah, this is season two. This is the start of season two.
yeah. So let's jump right in it, dude. So we have had a break, and we hated it. We missed everybody. We tried to stay on Instagram some. And for those that were kind of following and going back and forth with messages and posts, we appreciate it. I try to post up some of Ski's relatives and pictures and stuff just to have some fun or ask questions and stuff like that. Like, I think I asked some about music, because we have been, we've been going back and forth about new music and just trying to get into that. And what I realized is a lot of people, are interested in like, just not always just new music, but like music they've never heard of. So some people have said, hey, you guys should start like a Spotify account and put like song lists and stuff that you talk about. So
that's what we're going to do then.
Right. That's what we're going to do.
Speaking of which, man, my cousin Ronnie John, he came to my house the other day.
Yeah.
Had a bag full of cow pies. And you know what a cow pie is, right?
Yeah, unfortunately.
He's like,
yeah.
Hey, Ski, you want to go out and you want to burn some cow pies on some porches? I'm like, Ronnie John, we live in the suburbs, man. He said, I know. We're going to bring it to the suburbs. So you know what Ronnie John and I did?
What's that?
We lit cow pies on fire on the front porches.
Yeah.
We were ringing doorbells and running. I'll tell you this, man.
Yeah.
Even like when I was a little kid, I ring a doorbell and I get all excited. I instantly have to pee. It's like playing hide and seek, man. I get so excited, I need to call a timeout. Yeah.
Hey, and when you do... Do you still pull your pants down to your ankles like you're a little kid?
I leave them on the heels, man. It's the best, man, when you catch somebody doing that, like when you were younger, and you push them. You can't catch yourself when your feet are glued together, man.
Look, I just told this story the other day at work. Halloween, like, I don't know what year, pick a year, but I was in probably middle school age, running around with my brother and some of his buddies, the older kids, right? Now, we usually didn't do stupid stuff. Like, we just, you know. But for whatever reason, somebody got an idea. Let's run through this neighborhood and just smash all these pumpkins and just tear stuff up. Like, just acting completely stupid, which is out of character for me and especially, like, my brother and stuff. Anyway, we went and started doing that, right? And one of the guys says, hey, let's go up and one person ring the doorbell. And when whoever comes to the door, we all moon them, right? And for those people who don't know what that means, I don't know if that's a Southern term or not, but we all bend over, pull our pants down, show our butts. I don't know why that seemed like a good idea, but I thought, yeah, let's do that.
Mooning was a thing up north too. I just don't get it.
It's universal. I don't either, because it's stupid. So there's like eight or nine of us. We're all in this front yard lined up. Whoever it was goes and rings the doorbell. Me being all energetic and excited to be running around with the older guys, I'm the only one that goes pants all the way down to the ankles, bend over, and I'm laughing. Well, no one else does it. It was all part of the plan. They pushed me over like tipping cows, and I'm in the front yard trying to pull my pants up while this person's screaming and yelling behind me, dude.
You got duped.
Yeah. So anyway, so you are excited and you're ready to go with Ronnie John. Now, does he know that you all are like not kids anymore, that you don't need to go ring the doorbells?
No, man. He still wears his varsity jacket and
he's like, busy smashing out pennies on those train tracks or what?
He's still an O'Doyle, man. He roams around the town. He like, yeah. Ronnie John rules.
He puts Ronnie, his hands up. Hey, yeah. Yeah. Hey, what was Ronnie John's favorite band when y'all were growing up?
Oh, Skinnerd. Like,
100%. And he didn't say Lynyrd Skynyrd. If you said Lynyrd Skynyrd, he'd punch you in the face, right? He Skinnerd, said, like, man.
Skinnerd.
It's Skinnerd. Yeah. Never in Lynyrd, your pockets.
Lynyrd Skynyrd's for the posers, man. Yeah. I mean, I just listen to Skinnerd, man. I don't even know if there was another band out there. Pretty much Skinnerd.
Right. He'd be like, run your lunchbox. What kind of snacks you got? Let me get them little Debbies, right?
No, he was a moon pie guy.
Oh, definitely, definitely.
Ronnie All right, John.
So yeah, I like to I post random pictures like from who knows where, and then just create stupid characters that are related to ski, and he'll probably do the same here in the future.
Yeah, I mean, I'm gonna leave it up to the unknown. Ronnie John could be a real cousin of mine, or
could be
completely fabricated.
I work in real pictures sometimes too. On my other account, on my personal account, but
well, we have an idea moving forward for the episodes of cousins and characters, and these are all the people in our lives that are absolute maniacs that are pure entertainment, and everybody else would love to hear them too. So cousins and characters coming soon,
right? Yeah, anytime.
Just, just phone in, like just like literally, just like hey, call Otis right now, man.
Yeah. So Cousins of Characters is coming soon. We're also wanting to do a little bit of traveling, maybe going and go see some bands play, do maybe some interviews with some bands.
I saw you was at a Clutch concert, man.
Yes, it was.
That's the last time you and I like conversed face to face.
Yes, and that was a really, really, really good show.
You know that's right.
Yes. So in the future, that's what we want to do. We got a couple of bands already lined up that we wanted to be able to interview, and they're all kind of very nice and waiting patiently. You know, cause you schedule something, you got to cancel it. But a lot of times we're canceling it because the world got a little busy too. I'm switching gears, dude, but it's getting bad out there. Like, and it's been bad for a while now. I think what we're seeing now is the fallout from lockdowns and riots and society starting to get conditioned to not seeing a whole lot of police presence or proactive police stuff. Traffic stops are way down, self-initiated stops. So across the board, like a lot of the major cities, officers are not stopping people. You know what I mean? Like they're not going out at the park at, you know, midnight and being like, who's hanging out in the park, who's hanging out in the cuts between the apartments or trailer parks or houses or whatever. It's like, all the proactive stuff that for decades, you know, officers were doing in these cities to drive down violent crime, it's back, dude, with like a vengeance. And it's go ahead.
I was going to bring that up and I want your opinion on it. And this is not research. This is just off the cuff opinions, but I feel like we live in a pretty desirable area in the South that is known for being safe. It's family friendly, the whole nine yards. Mm-hmm. But surrounding cities close by are at an all-time high for homicides. They're at an all-time high for violent crime. They couldn't be more short-staffed on the law enforcement side of things. That includes sheriff's departments, local municipalities, larger police departments, smaller police departments. So what are we seeing, right? What is the, and again, this is speculation and I guess professional opinion, but is this just like, is the volcano erupting? Is that where we're at?
I hope it's already erupted, but when I'm talking to some dudes, you know, that have about the same amount of years with me, and some of them are like, no, this is just the beginning of it. I don't think that way. I think that's the the consensus among a lot of people. They see it getting worse because it takes so long to hire somebody off of the street or even from another agency. But usually you hire a new applicant, it's going to take about a year to get them through the interview process, get them trained up, and then get them on the street. And then you're looking about a year before you get your return on investment with them answering 911 dispatches, like on patrol, you know, hey, shooting here, trespassing there, and they're answering calls and can actually manage their beat or their area. So that's a year. So if you're already, if an agency's already, you know, 40% understaffed, which is probably off the top of my head, I don't know, but probably the average, you know, is like 40%.
I just want to throw that out. That is a terrifying number.
It should be. Like, people should go. Well, I don't
imagine,
I'm not saying, like, panic, but they should understand.
Imagine like a football team lining up and they're going up against a fully staffed team.
Yes.
And only 40% of your team showed up.
That is a that's a perfect analogy because of two things. One, I played Pop Warner football when I was a little kid, so I'm an actual expert in football. Two, I wouldn't be able to do any other sports analogies for you because I don't know anything about the other sports. So
and I don't even watch football, man. I just left it at I just used that as an example. But
no, you're right. Like, when I was a kid though, I did it for 2 years and it was the greatest thing ever, man. I loved it. Only because I could let my aggression out in a positive way, but also study plays and start to learn that there's a strategy. So like you said, okay, take sport or take football. Okay, let's say we're two police departments, right? Mm-hmm. If I'm 40% understaffed and you're fully staffed, just like in sports, you're gonna stomp me on the field because I'm not going to have proper blocking. I'm not going to have proper, like, linebackers and blitzing and doing what needs to be necessary. And my players are probably going to become exhausted very quickly because they're playing Iron Man football, right? They're going offense and defense.
Right.
You have a deep enough bench, you're running offense, they're fresh, defense fresh. And their minds can go, oh, I only need to blitz this quarterback and do everything I can to knock the
well, and I'm looking at it from a perspective of, you know, criminals are fully staffed right now and then some, and then these police departments are, you know, at 40%. So you line up on the line to fight the battle, like just the sheer numbers alone are it's terrifying.
So what ends up happening, I didn't mean to cut you off, but what ends up happening is when you go understaffed like that, now you have officers who are exhausted. They're running offense and defense. So if they're running 12-hour shifts, which probably a lot of departments are, because then you can have lower staffing to cover more hours. It's also exhausting, though, to be plugged in, locked on for 12 hours. On top of that, you probably have people getting pulled for special assignments because your other divisions or your other assignments that normally would cover special events, that sort of thing, they're short-staffed because you're losing officers. So now you're pulling patrol officers to fill in these special assignments, or they got to guard, you know, somebody at the hospital, like, whatever it is. It's like all these little taskings that come down the line, and they're just burned out and tired. And on top of that, they have to see news stories or social media where people are just bashing police. I do think that's changing. I think there's a vibe out there where people have realized, okay, we have been manipulated. We've seen enough now and heard enough, hopefully, from police departments pushing forward and saying, hold on, we've been kind of in the shadows and violent crime has been down for over 10, 15 years because of our actions. We just haven't told the public everything that we do. We do our job and move on. Now it's like we have to stop and tell the public what's going on, why we're doing it, how we're doing it, so they understand. But yeah, I do think that vibe is changing. That's why I say I hope that even though a lot of departments are understaffed and violent crime you're pulling numbers, man, in some of these cities.
And that's what I want to dive into. That's what I want to dive into first, right? And then we'll talk about the execution of how we're going to get it back under control. But we're not just seeing the normal run-of-the-mill violence, right? You know, usually in any major city, you have your drug areas, you have your gang areas, and you know, that saying that 10% of the population commits 90% of the crime, right?
Yes.
I think that's still pretty fair, but we're seeing a lot of crimes outside of that wheelhouse right now where homicides will be not gang member on gang member, drug dealer on drug dealer, but you have just like everyday people, right? That, you know, and I know I'm kind of lumping people into this category, but
right,
you understand what I'm saying. You have the everyday people just snapping and shooting people and going on these sprees and like, so what is it? Right. And
yeah.
What's your take on it, man? And I have my own opinion.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to nerd out for a second. I shouldn't even say nerd out. Like, actually, I should just say, like, so my background in college was psychology. That was what I got my degree in. And I just became fascinated with human behavior. Right. So if I start talking like that, people do go, oh, what a nerd. However, that's how you apply it in police work. That's all we're dealing with, human behavior. So I watch these trends like that. Like, it's almost like the vibe of an area or certain crimes take off, you know? So like frauds take off and you can kind of trace some of it and go, oh, well, fraud became, you know, prevalent in this area because these guys learned how to do fraud from one another. They were sharing like the recipe for stealing bands or whatever. But when you're looking at the crimes right now, like the violence, you're right. You can research it in other cities too. And our experience has been recently, within maybe the last year, year and a half, there are a lot of people that are just snapping. Couples are killing one another. And there's been like, you know, underlying problems, but you don't always see heavy documentation. And I've talked to other agencies as well, just like, hey, well, what, you know, like, what's your vibe? Like, what's going on out there? It's the same thing in most of the cities. The crazy thing is, like you said, like when people just snap and you have active shooters or you have people like taking knives and just like going around, just cutting people, like stabbing people. It is weird. And I think that what we'll in 20 years, we'll look back and study it and it'll be crystal clear, obviously, because we're looking back and studying all these facts of what happened. And I can only speculate that we're going through such a cultural shift. But like in 1968, when the cultural shifts were happening, you saw it through the news. And maybe like if you were a college student, you saw it through interactions with other students or some adults who were well-versed in history, and they may be able to explain things or they may push a certain agenda. Now you can plug on to social media and see whatever you want to see. So you start to get in that like vacuum of everything is the world's going to blow up and we're going to go into riots and politics, this and that. And so people begin to get in that cycle of negativity. And it's like, okay, the end of, like people will use that term, like this is the end of days and stuff. And
yeah,
so yeah, go ahead.
We live in a time, which is fascinating to me, is we live in a choose your own adventure world right now.
Ooh, I like that. Yeah. Yeah.
In the sense of like, you know, what my household sees and believes and the way we live is completely different than the people that live right next door. And it's all really what we choose to feed ourselves with, right? And our main source of information at this point in time is probably social media. So, you know, I've had this conversation a lot lately that we are all existing together, but living completely different lives based on, you know, what we're consuming. Right. And I know that's not like this profound observation, but it's so true. And I think it's even more true now. If you want to check out a really cool social media page, look up After School. It's AfterSkool. And he does all these really cool animated, just little drawings with like a little saying or two lines, just kind of describing like his perspective of society right now. And usually the dude's spot on. But yeah, man, I think we're just seeing humans just living out these completely different lives, right? You know, you've seen that picture pop up where you got two people sitting on a bus and the one guy's looking out the one window and it's doom and gloom and thunder and lightning, and the other guy's looking out the other window and it's sunshine. It's like to me, it's all where you turn your head, man. It's where you put your focus to. But I think it's so much bigger than just that, man. I think it's on a cellular level, man. Like, it's what we consume, it's what we're eating, it's what we drink, it's it's so much more than just news influence and media influence. And I just think like we're at a breaking point, like we're at a non-sustainable point of intake right now, whether it's like our diets, it's the music we listen to, the news we listen to, the books we read. Like, we're at an overload, man, and like clearly as a human existence, we're not doing it the right way. That's my opinion.
No, I agree with you. I think when you're talking about like what you consume, I stopped watching the news years ago. I probably like 5 years ago. Yeah. It's like something like that. I mean, about 5 years ago. And I've been chastised at work at times because several years ago I had an assignment that was like an Intel assignment. And so some people would be like, oh, how did you not know that on the news? Or why? Like, I don't care. Like, I really don't care. I only worry about Intel or like what's going on in the city. I don't care if everywhere else is anyway. So because we can take in all that, like you're saying, we literally, when you sit down to watch even Netflix, Amazon Prime, Hulu, whatever, like all these streaming services, if you don't have something in mind and you just click on that, you're going to scroll for 20, 30 minutes, maybe looking for something to watch. So your brain's not really taking in anything. You're just kind of looking for the next best thing to watch. But when you're on like social media, and I'll say Instagram, because that's the one I'm on, there's constant, like, just you scroll and it can go from something really funny to all of a sudden, sadly, you're seeing like one person getting hurt in a very horrific way. So it's almost like faces of death every day. And if you get caught on that cycle and you start looking at that stuff, everything becomes negative.
Yep.
And so when you're talking about like consuming, so think about like you consume junk food, you overeat, you get sluggish, you're not exercising, you're not getting enough sleep at night. And then you're consuming all this stuff and you start taking on that negative mindset. And then it cycles, man. So if someone says, like, if I say, whatever, if you know, whatever city this person lives in, I say, yeah, your police department is 40% understaffed and your violent crime has tripled and your motor vehicle collisions have quadrupled, you know, they may immediately go, oh my gosh, I got to get my guns. I got to hunker down. This is going to be bad. Instead of going, well, okay, my day-to-day life, what is it like? Is it affecting me yet? And well, what plans are in place? Like, are you all just screaming and crying and yelling and eating donuts and drinking coffee? Or are you being problem solvers and going, okay, how can we change this? A good example would be, and this, well, people get upset when you start talking about the military and law enforcement and that whole theory about, oh, law enforcement's militarized and the warrior mindset versus the guardian mindset. All I'm gonna simply say is when wars were fought 400 years ago, 300 years ago, 100 years ago, when human beings locked in combat, it has evolved and changed. And so you go from a million person army to 100,000, you know, to potentially a very small footprint in a foreign land of, say, 100 people. But they may have the technology and the intel and the sources on the ground to destroy whatever that force is, whatever that enemy terrorist, usually it's terrorist groups now, but a very small group of very capable people can go in there and do that. So even though a police department is 40% understaffed or whatever, 30%, if they have the right motivated officers and the right strategies in place, potentially they can still curb some of that violence if it is linked to drug sales, cartels, gangs, an organization that they can disrupt. The problem we're seeing, like I said, with some of the violence is that it's not necessarily criminally driven. It's more psychopathy. It's more the person's brain or their attitude has changed and is becoming more, not necessarily violent, but just more stressed, more anxiety, more negativity to where something like that can happen. So, I mean, it's both sides of the coin. But if an agency or department is moving forward to disrupt the criminal organizations, as these crime rates climb, they'll keep that in check. So that'll be okay, right? The problem is right now, a very big trend is hands off of everything. So there are agencies and departments, when I'm talking to them about gangs and criminal motorcycle clubs or CMCs, they're like, well, we're not doing anything. We've disbanded gang units. We've disbanded a lot of our proactive street level units. We're just going to reactive. And the drawback is now you have, like, if you were looking at a pie chart or a graph or whatever, I mean, I don't care about graphs and stuff, but if you were, you would see the potential for very severe violence because the gangs are growing because they're going unchecked in certain areas. On top of people under this constant pressure and this terrible diet of negative social media, the news, probably a lot of junk food, lack of exercise, lack of sleep, lack of water. A lot of people run around dehydrated, but this whole idea that now you've got the perfect storm brewing where at least you could disrupt the criminal gang organizations and keep hammering them the way we've been doing for years so that when the average citizen snaps, at least it balances out some and you don't have both, you know, both of these negative forces converging almost.
I was going to touch on that. I think those one-offs are more few and far between than the violence and the criminal activity that we already know. So we stay focused on, you know, let's not chase something that's not there.
Here's a perfect example. The trend where, and you heard it a lot from other agencies, and I'm not saying it's a bad one. I just think that what people do on social media is they take the idea that social workers are going to respond to 911 emergency dispatches or whatever. That kind of took on a life of its own. And I'm like, this is kind of dumb. Really, what probably is going on in most cities is agencies are looking at, we have a huge mental health crisis, right? I mean, you may lose a mental health facility in your jurisdiction. So when that shuts down, now you have a large population that needed those resources that are not getting them. So now you have officers responding to calls in which someone is having a psychotic episode, or maybe they're just in a depressive state. And so the family's worried about them being suicidal. And you have to go in there and talk to them and try to help them as best you can as a police officer. What I was hearing for, I don't know, like the last 2 or 3 years, is people had no clue that police departments and agencies had evolved in the last 20 years. A lot of departments were already doing that. Officers were already trained in crisis intervention. And so that had already been in place. But once the facility shuts down, you get overrun or overloaded with people without those resources. And so those call volumes go up. And it looks like, or you have an incident where an officer shoots somebody in a psychotic episode or whatever. And then you watch 5 seconds of that video and the country, you know, has all their comments like, oh my God, why did they just shoot that guy? And they don't look at the whole circumstance. When sometimes officers get on scene and the family is like, he has threatened to kill me for the last 3 weeks. He calls me demon child or whatever it is. I'm just kind of saying whatever it could be. He has a knife in his waistband. You know, like we've been on calls before where people have given us misinformation. They don't mean to do it, but they give you information that's not accurate and that's all you have. And so then when someone reaches in for a waistband or they reach under a car or into their suitcase or the bag, you assume, oh no, they're reaching for a weapon because this family member who spent the last 30 years with them just told me that's what they've been doing. And so then you get a use of force and then you're like dusting the person off like, hey, I'm sorry that happened, but you reached in your bag and they don't know what's going on. So,
a good point. There's an assumption that, you know, we have a lot of people, oh, why is law enforcement responding to mental crisis calls? Well, who else is going to show up?
Right.
Well, and then you said, oh, we're going to start dispatching these non-sworn civilian social workers, this and that. That's all good and fine till one of them catches a bullet right between the eyes. Right.
Right. And I don't, oh, go ahead. I'm sorry. Well,
yeah. And my point here is we don't have that many options in dealing with somebody that has the potential to become extremely violent or is already acting extremely violent. Whether or not it is a mental health issue that's causing it, it still doesn't take away from the fact that at that very moment, they are a threat to society and the people around them. Well, you can't say, well, he has a mental disability. That's not a free pass at violence, right? Right. We have to do something.
Yeah.
You know, I can't show up on a call and I go, oh, is he just like high on drugs? Oh, right. Yeah, he's okay. He's high on crack. Cool. I can go handle business. Oh, he's got a mental health disorder, right? Whatever that means. That's a big brush, right? Yeah. that doesn't mean that we just back out and just let it be. Because,
yeah,
because, well, then what? We don't intervene and he goes into the neighbor's house and, you know, he or she and ends up harming somebody over there. And then everybody's going, well, the cops were there. They didn't do anything.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah. That's the pressure of it. And so when people are talking about like, oh, a social worker is going to respond out there. I don't know that any, I'm speaking ignorantly. I don't know. Departments could be doing that. I think the idea is to have a unit where a social worker is attached to that unit to help work long-term cases or more repeat locations maybe. So if you have a certain house, 123 Mockingbird Lane or whatever, is where you have a lot of mental commitment paperwork being generated, or maybe the person is schizophrenic and they love the police, but they believe that it's religious based, you know, that these demons are going to come attack them, but that the police are really good. So maybe they're not violent to the police, but that social worker or that therapist, however it works out, may be able to give guidance to the officers or even respond and build rapport because it's a repeat location. I don't know.
I'm ignorant on the process, but I don't see that as a feasible in the heat of the moment.
No. And this, I like to interrupt you a lot, Ski, so I'm going to keep doing it. Sorry. But it's one of those things where I get kind of fired up when I have about two or three cups of coffee and we're just kind of talking at work, or you and I are talking and we're solving the world's problems. And it is think about this. Pick whatever Fortune 500 company, a company that has been around forever and has made a whole lot of money, right? Mm-hmm. I will pick UPS because they've been around since like 1900 something and started out with one guy with an idea and a bicycle in Seattle, Washington, if I remember right. He gets his brother on board. They start delivering packages. And now look at what UPS is. Global business that can basically put a package just about anywhere in the world, right? That all started with an idea, a level of motivation, and execution. Right. That's all they have was a service. So they're providing a service and they're as good as their service. That's it. They make billions of dollars. Right. They have a secret. I'm speaking ignorantly here because I don't work for UPS. I don't think that UPS would ask BC and Ski, hey, what do you think would make our company run better? Because we have no clue. We don't run a company. We don't make money. But that's what's going on in it seems like in a lot of cities with law enforcement departments and agencies. You have people who are either elected or appointed, you know, to a city government or elected as maybe like mayor, city council, whatever. And because there's this trend of, we need more social workers, you know, involved in police work or whatever. Now you have someone who has no clue how to do police work or what it's like deciding policies or pushing an idea for a policy that doesn't make any sense and is unsafe for everybody. That's kind of where I get frustrated. It's like, I don't walk into UPS and give my opinion because I have no clue. I don't have 30 years of experience with UPS. I have plenty of years of experience in police work, and it's fact-based. It's like results-based, right? So same thing with like crisis intervention and stuff. If what we're doing in law enforcement is working, let us keep doing it. Don't try to interject something because you have the good idea fairy going on and it's not based in reality and you haven't tested it out and you don't know these things. You just say this will look good to voters or this will look good to citizens. Okay, but you're also putting the family in harm's way. You're putting the law enforcement officer in harm's way. And more importantly, it seems to be the trend is, what about the respondent, right? Or the citizen who's in crisis? You are putting them in harm's way when an officer can't get there and actually address it in a safe manner with the amount of tools they have and the proper level of force, if necessary, in order to prevent them from harming themselves or a third person.
You just brought up a good point, and I think this is a good debate we can have real quick. Who says, and at what point in time was the decision made that we're not doing a good job in law enforcement?
Ooh.
Because
that's a good
question. I'll push back hard on that, and I'll say we're doing a fantastic job collectively across the country. If you look at, you know, the populations in these big cities and the amount of actual officers that are out there serving and protecting that city. There's a good catchphrase for you. We're doing a damn good job. And
I
think it's more back to that consumer mentality of somebody said at some point 5 years ago that we were no longer doing a good enough job and everything has to change, right?
Yes.
I don't think that's the truth.
I don't either.
I think we were doing a fantastic job. And now I think we're not doing as good of a job as we were before they tried to fix the quote unquote problem, right? Because what happened was is officers got demotivated in the sense of basically saying, you know, like I'm trying to word this correctly so a bunch of people aren't up in arms, but I mean, the hands of officers were tied, and the it wasn't the I'm just having a hard time spitting out what I'm trying to say, man. Is it's just like the it's just not worth it was is actually a saying now that is kind of true, because you make one wrong mistake, you're absolutely losing your job. You're gonna face social media scrutiny on YouTube and, you know, any social media platform. For what is the question, right? And I'm kind of playing devil's advocate. I'm playing both sides, but when an officer tells me right now, well, I'm not stopping cars because it's just not worth it. I don't disagree with them, and I disagree with them all at the same time. Right?
Yes. Yeah.
And so we have taken something that I think we were doing a really good job at, and we have tried to fix it. And I say we, and I'm just, it's more of a political climate that has tried to change this and just our culture collectively, and we have actually made it so much worse. And now you're seeing, like, that was my initial question, how did we get here? Now you're seeing it. Officers are going, well, I need to make this paycheck, and if I just sit in my car and I just do nothing, the probability of me getting fired or becoming a YouTube sensation overnight is way less than me going out there and actually kicking ass and getting guns off the street and, you know, making these contacts and, you know. So what's your thought on that, man?
Yeah, well, the sad thing is that is kind of the vibe. And it doesn't mean that officers don't care. I think it's the opposite. They do care. That's why they became police officers.
Right.
People still join police departments for the same reasons, right? People still walk through that door, let it be known they want to be an officer, and they go through the process. It's still for the same reasons. It's not to change the world. Is to just affect change in their lives and their city, and to do something that they think is going to matter. Hands down, like, nobody is walking through a door, especially right now, applying to be a police officer and saying, I'm doing it because I want to make a lot of money, because they're not going to make a lot of money. Or they get, I mean, some cities, they get paid well for what they do, but also it's not, I mean, that's not why people do it. And they don't do it because it's glamorized anymore or anything like that, you know, and there's no, you don't have people that want a power trip, because it's the opposite now. It is, and I say society, it's almost like we want to beat down the officers. We want to bash them. We want to basically tell them how horrible they are. And I think some people buy into that because they had a negative experience with one officer, or some people just don't want to be told what to do or have to follow rules. So they're going to hate all cops, or they're just going to hate the ability.
Yeah, and I think another thing you're seeing too, man, and this comes from me, is, you know, my perspective on certain things has changed over the last few years, because the other side of that coin is you are seeing overstepping of the government. You are seeing this very controlling atmosphere and like these grabs to have way more control, right? And law enforcement is an arm of the government, whether you know, you don't have to be a sworn to the U.S. government to still be an arm. You know, you're a local municipality, you're still into that, you're still an extension of the government, right? So that anti-authority mentality of going like, hey, they're overstepping their boundaries and these guys are also part of them. You know, it's kind of an interesting phenomenon, because even people in the profession, I'm like, well, yeah, no, they shouldn't have that much control or that much power. So we're the easy target in law enforcement to say, well, I'm going to start by disobeying them, right? I don't know how to disobey the elected official, but I do know how to disobey law enforcement, right? So it is interesting, and I do get, you know, that, you know, sovereignty and sovereign citizens and stuff, like, you know, you can have the debate. Are they actually as crazy as we once thought they were?
Mm-hmm. Well, it's like anything, it's going to be certain splinters or certain mindsets or people that go to extremes. That's my thing. Is like, I'm basically, if you leave me alone, I'm a good person. I like people. I'm kind. You know, so I'm not going to mess with anyone. However, I have the capabilities to do exactly whatever I need to do to defend myself or a third person or whatever. But for the most part, man, I don't care what anybody does in their home. I don't care how they live their lives. I just don't care, because if I can look around on the street and see people happy, smiling, laughing, if I stop by a coffee shop and someone's got blue hair and they say, hey, I want you to refer to me as them, cool. I will do whatever I can to make someone feel good during their day. I don't get hung up on anything like that. What I don't like, though, is, like you said, any type of overreach or a person thinking that, oh, we need to put policies in place or whatever to control people. Because you can't control people.
No.
All you can do is try to create a safe environment, which that's what your police are there for. And when people are in a safe environment, they will then hopefully have more ability to just kind of be happy and live their lives. When you create an environment because you're making decisions not based on logic or your background or your experience, you're basing it on either the political climate or you're running a news channel and you need to get clicks and likes and push for more advertising to make money, then you're going to sensationalize stories and you're going to really mess up what is really a good system and what is really why we saw so much reduction in violent crime for years was because we, as law enforcement, were doing everything right. Our internal affairs, you can research that. Like, across the board, most major cities, internal affairs complaints were lower, but from the public, but your departments, internal affairs complaints, like officer to supervisor, like complaints, legitimate complaints, were increasing, because the culture when especially when we became police officers, and for the last, you know, X number of years, has always been, we don't want corruption. We don't want unprofessional police officers. We don't want someone out there in the cut beating somebody or talking trash to them, because it's going to affect us and the citizens. So we've kind of checked our, and in general, you know, as a profession, we've checked our own and been like, either I'm going to handle it in the locker room with you, or we're going to handle it in the parking lot, or we're going to let it be known that you're not going to operate like this in our city. So move on down the street. Yep. Or some officers would go and just actually file a complaint and say, hey, this person is doing whatever, sleeping in a parking lot, whatever, however they want to handle it. But those numbers were increasing. So you saw this trend of highly professional police officers, better trained police officers, problem solvers. And what happens when you, as an adult, are being hired and someone says, here, we believe that you are intelligent enough and capable enough to make life and death decisions and to actually affect change in an area where you see violence or gangs or drugs every day, go forth and do it. That's your job. And you can do something and come up with an idea and implement it with your friends on patrol or whatever it is, or you're in a specialized unit, you get motivated from that. And it's like this works. Like, hey, we're actually seeing change. We're seeing grandmothers peeking out the windows, or we're walking through the cuts and they come on the back porch and basically give you the thumbs up symbol. Like, hey, keep doing what you're doing. And then they go back in the house. So it's this idea of, oh, this is what becoming an officer or deputy or whatever or agent is like. We're seeing the change. We're actually doing stuff. Yeah, it's violent and we're getting guns and we're getting the use of force. But guess what? The shootings are going down. The violence is going down. And so therefore you get hooked on that idea of, I matter. My life matters. And I'm actually helping make a neighborhood safer or people to live a better life.
I think there's a way to set that tone. Let's just say Monday was the day that a police department was going to change the way they operated and actually take their power back.
Okay.
This is what I think it looks like. At 6 a.m. when Monday morning, when a whole new fleet of officers go out on patrol, they leave roll call, and they establish a new norm. And they basically go to their beat, and they go to the area where the troublemakers are and the high crime areas, and they say, hey, we're doing something different today. Things have got a little off the tracks. I'm going to treat everybody out here with respect. We're going to smile and we're going to laugh. But the second that you commit a crime, you're going to face the consequences for it. So you're establishing that groundwork again, basically saying we can cut up here, smoke and joke and have fun. But when it's time for me to do my job, I'm going to do my job. Right. Mm-hmm. We're not shying away from traffic stops anymore. I'm not shying away from a Terry frisk. I'm not shying away from a voluntary encounter. I'm not shying away from detaining you. I just want you to know that me and the 100 other officers working the city today, we're done being timid. Right.
Yeah.
If that tone is set in every beat across the city, by the end of the day, like, phones are going to be ringing going, hey, the department's changed already today. Like, these officers are out here and they're not being dicks about it, but they're just saying, hey, we're actually done being timid. We're actually done sitting back. We're going to get back to policing. We're going to get back to engaging in the community. Dude, I'm telling you right now, just that alone would change. So, and if that happened for a week straight, every time these new, and I'm just talking about patrol officers.
Patrol officer
comes on and says, hey, FYI, the department, we're going back to the way it used to be. And we're going to handle business and we're going to get guns off the street and we're going to arrest people for committing crimes. And so I'm just giving you the heads up. If you don't want to deal with that, just knock it. Right.
Yeah. Or move, move somewhere else, or
get gone. That, and this is not like an opinion or a theory that would actually work, because we've done stuff like that. We went to a block, like the 400 block of this street. And we basically put our flag down and said, hey, all that shit y'all are doing, it stops today. And if you don't believe me, just try me.
Yeah.
It really works. Right. And I think there is a tactful way to do that. We're just timid right now as a profession. We're very timid. We're scared. Not scared of doing the job, but we're just scared of ruffling feathers. But we need to get back to just being the police, man.
And the tone is set from the sergeant. And I say sergeant, every department's probably different, but like that first level leader, if it's a sergeant, corporal, whatever, we'll just say sergeant. If the sergeant, as in roll call, says, this is the deal, this is how we're going to operate. And then the sergeant goes out and is with those officers during the foot pursuits, during the encounters. And maybe the sergeant lays the groundwork too and says, hey, this is the deal. You know, because we've done this before. We have to introduce beat officers to the gang members. You know, this is Officer so-and-so. This is his beat. That means he's responsible. I'm holding him responsible to make sure there's no violence. The good news is he's going to run the beat kind of like I used to be, right? So if you're cool with him, he's going to be cool with you. No gun play out here on the block. No fighting. You know, I don't want any open air drug sales. You go do whatever you do behind closed doors and there's no violence. Oh, well, we're good. You stand out here on the block, you know, that sort of thing. Then they're like, cool, we know where we stand.
Yeah.
Then when it happens and you go, I even had that talk with you. No, man, you're right. You're right.
Yeah. And I've had that conversation and you get somebody that is friendly with you, but they're also a criminal. And you have that good rapport, and we've talked a lot about that in the past, and that good relationship. But they know when it's business time, it's business time.
Yeah.
Hey, you run, I'm going to chase you. You fight, I'm going to punch you. If you comply, I'm going to treat you just with as much respect as any other person, right?
Yeah.
But setting that tone. I have a funny story, though, man. You're talking about good leadership and good supervisor. When I was on gang unit, we had a sergeant that was just nonstop, and he didn't like to, in the beginning of the shift, like on an evening shift, he didn't want to get a snack or a cup of coffee or eat first. He just wanted to go to work.
Yeah.
So we decided as a squad, we were going to go grab a quick bite first. And that ruffled the supervisor's feathers a little bit. So halfway through my slice of pizza, he's on the radio down where we should be. Scrumming it up, man. He's got two people proned out. He's missing half his gear. He's in a fight and this and that. Dude, that's just leading by example. And that's the supervisors that we need right now. He's like, you know, we get there and he's like, hey, you guys are screwing around eating. I guess I'll come out here and do y'all's job for you. You know what I mean? And
yeah,
I don't know.
He came from that era of what we call the crime fighter, where you had a chief would walk in,
and she would
say, "I want crime fighters. Your job is not to be an armed secretary. You're not just going out there and taking a report.
Yeah.
You take that report, you develop leads, you go arrest whoever did that crime. If you can't, type it up and send it to a detective. But I want you out there getting guns out of waistbands. I want you messing with gangs. I want you messing with the drug dealers, and the crime will go down." And she was exactly right. So my mindset from the beginning, from day one in the academy, was under that chief, and it was go be a crime fighter. And she came from another agency, which made sense because she had seen 20, 25 years of, hey, this works. Mm-hmm. Know your area. Know if there's a cycle of violence and go do something about it. But also that mindset of you are an intelligent person. Above all, you are a problem solver. So any police department that still goes off of this edict or whatever, they want you to be like this automaton or this robot that just goes out there and follows orders. You know, it's like, nah, man, you go out there and solve the problem.
Yep.
So that brings me to one last point I'll say about police work and stuff is just the officers or the applicants now who are applying are highly motivated and are usually very, very impressive to me because of that, because on everything going on, they are going in there and saying, I want to be cops or I want to be a deputy or agent. The idea is what we need to do now as a whole profession is to pull them under our wing, guide them, and then teach them the ways of proactive policing so that when they get on patrol and that sergeant says, we're going to work tonight, like, you know, those five guys you see out there every day on the corner sitting on a power box, right? We're going to mess with them today. Like, we got to make their lives not fun for sitting there and committing crimes. Mm-hmm. But if you just tell an officer to do that, they don't know. They don't have that skill set. But that's where we got to pass that information down. I just say, like, right now, I don't want everybody to be negative or to think that the world's going to blow up. I think we are shifting to public opinion is going to start going back to supporting the police and understanding we were doing all the right things prior to this storm. And people who had no logic in police work or no background in police work, no idea, started pushing policies and agendas that were not rooted in results and that didn't actually put the safety of citizens in the primary position to look at. They just kind of were like, oh, well, this is what should happen. And we're going to cut funding because you all aren't trained properly. Well, how are you going to get training properly if you cut our funding? How are we going to actually become better if what you're saying is true, that we're not up to par or whatever? Well, you cut our funding and now we're going to suffer. And if the idea is we're just going to bash police and jump on a bandwagon, then you're going to actually cause problems with recruiting and retention, which is exactly what has happened. So the suburbs probably are doing pretty good with their police departments, like staffing levels. It's the big cities where we see this like mass exodus where people, like you just said, it's not worth it. I'm going to get into a deadly force situation, or I'm going to get into something, even if I don't go out there and stop a car or whatever, it's just going to land in my lap on a 911 dispatch or something like. So I think though we're moving right now. I think some of the vibe is the average citizens coming forward and going, hold on, I'm not just going to eat this spoon fed hate that you keep giving me about police and stuff or whatever. Like, I'm going to actually study it, or I'm going to actually see what are the results. And I think the more people speak out, then the better. So
I want to do a whole episode on this new consciousness and the great awakening that we're actually living through.
Let's do it.
I'm serious, man, because it is happening. We are living in two. And I do think it's just two sides of the coin. Like, you're either like you see it or you don't. And then like there's just so much. Yeah. So much happening right now where people are waking up and going, holy shit.
Yeah. Yeah.
I've been duped on every level. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And when you see it, it's crystal clear. And I know I sound like one of those crazy conspiracy theorists now, but the Great Awakening, we're living through one right now. And it's really exciting time to like,
enjoy the
human experience because it's actually fascinating what's happening right now.
Well, I want to say that we're 55 minutes into an episode, and I have yet to say skate punk or punk rock. So I'm going to say it right now.
Actually, one of somebody did say shout out to my man that said this. He said, "Y'all need to have a drinking game that every time BC says punk rock or something like that, you drink." He said, "People be hammered by the first 10 minutes of the game."
It is true, but no, that was my awakening as a kid. Was just questioning everything, and not in a violent way. I was never in people's faces.
No, it's got nothing to do with violence.
But my brain was starting to become hardwired to question. So now when I do watch a news story, I don't get mad or angry because I'm like, I see right through this. I see right through where you're manipulating headlines. You're trying to get your clicks and likes. I can move on to the next thing. So when, like you're saying, that awakening, if people are getting plugged in and they're rewiring how they think, then they feel a little bit better and they go, oh, I'm in control. If I want to exercise, get enough sleep, eat properly, I'm going to feel better. Now I've got the energy to just go, you know what? Sorry, news channel. You don't get to get hate and get my, and I'm not even going to share your stupid video and make it viral. I'm just going to ignore you because you don't matter anymore. And I'm not,
I love it, man. Well, because we are a catch-all show, like, I don't think our show actually has a theme, man. We have obviously a background of law enforcement, so we talk about it a lot. But, you and I have a lot of ideas for future episodes that are way outside of this wheelhouse. But I think the people that like our show will dig it. And what I want to do is just talk about some of our future episode ideas. And then if you like it or don't like it, go on to our page on Instagram and just say, yeah, that's a stupid idea, or I'd be down to listen to it. Right.
We're talking about
a lot of things. We're touching on a lot of things in this conversation, right? We're talking about health and nutrition and our food system and all that. What if we had on like some regenerative agricultural farmers that knew nothing about growing food and then they just started their own farming business and all of a sudden it just took off?
Yes,
because you're starting to book them. You're starting to see that. You're starting to see that all over, man. And the deeper you dive into stuff like that and what we eat, and I talked about stuff on the cellular level earlier, is like to actually change our makeup and our cells and like make us different people through just what we absorb. That's a whole nother conversation, but I think the disruptors could actually pull that off in a fun way.
Yeah.
What do you think, man? You think I'm crazy? Do I sound like a weird hippie, man?
No, dude. That's what I'm saying. Because we are open minded. Like we don't live in this like lane on the highway, right?
We're switching lanes.
We're taking exit ramps. Tell me about it. Because you know what? Immediately, I go, well, when I was a kid, we did pull stuff from the garden and we ate it. And my grandmother would be like, "This is how you cut okra. This is how you do this and that. These are my collards. These are my watermelons we're growing over here. Here's my squash." And that's what we did as kids, man. You go to my grandmother's house and all the cousins, we'd be over there pulling and plucking and then washing and cooking. It's true. You feel better. I mean, that's just, it's common sense, but we've gotten away from that. So you're right. I'm all about it. I think that you got some ideas too for guests that
people
are going to dig, man.
Yeah. What else you got up your sleeve, man?
Oh, I've got like some guests lined up, like we said, from the music background, from the clinical background, people that are into forensic psychology. There's a person I've got online, that I want to reach back out to. I read his book about 2 years ago now, but I want to reach out to him and see about getting him on. He's done a lot of stuff on the West Coast with police departments. Sort of like profiling, but like criminal profiling or psychological profiling, but also helping understand why an offender does what they do and then things that you possibly could do to pick up the red flags. One of the people that showed me his book, she's got a background in being a victim, and I'd love to bring her on and, get her on and actually talk about her background, how she was stalked by this guy, like a serial stalker. And it was scary, but she doubled down and went after him. And I don't want to give away any of her story, but just guess like that. I'm into also, like you said, bringing some people on who are doing some things with physical fitness and exercise and trying to break that cycle. We've got one person in mind that actually goes and travels and gets with police agencies and shows them different stretching techniques and being mindful and how to kind of just decompress. And people go, oh, well, that's easy. But a lot of people aren't doing that. They're kind of going home. They're taking their uniform off, whatever, to go home. Sadly, they start to drink a lot of beer. Maybe they go into a depressive state. And we've seen that with suicide rates increasing and stuff. So I'm with you, man. We bring on some people. We talk about some stuff. We enlighten it. It's not always police related. But I also like when citizens or people can go, okay, well, I didn't know that perspective. Or I've had people say too, like, well, you guys don't talk like cops. And I'm like, well, I don't know how cops talk. I mean, we're not going to speak in 10 codes. But but the idea that we can keep an open mind. I also want to bring some guests on from other podcasts.
Yes.
Because, you know, everybody's kind of got a podcast going on. And it's like I get inundated because I just finally got on Spotify. So I'm still kind of learning that, you know, aspect. So it's like it opens the door to easily listen to podcasts better. But there are several podcasts out there that I want to get the guests on here. And we talk with them just because their shows are so interesting. Like one of them is Veteran State of Mind. Great. The guys are writers, got a background in the military. Garrett Jones is just, it's good. So Veteran State of Mind, Spear Talk podcast. We've been trying to get John on for a while. He does security for Shinedown and some other stuff. So we're always trying to line him up, but he's just a great guy, fun to talk to. There's a new podcast out, Ski, that was kind of inspired by some stuff that we were all doing on Instagram, where we were just talking about punk rock cops and trying to find one another out there. And there's a company called
Drink.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, everybody's got to take a drink. But there's a company called Unit to Back, and it's a punk rock cop who makes t-shirts that are punk and skate related that are overall theme of like police work, but it makes it in a real cool way. Shirts are great, man. But that has kind of taken a life of its own, where these three punk rock cops, and we've all kind of messaged back and forth, they started a podcast and its own 10-8 Memes podcast, which is already an existing show. But Officer Y, who's the host, allows them or supports them, and they post episodes under 10-8 Memes podcast. And the category is just called Punk Rock Cops. And they literally sit there and talk about their background, their music. One of the hosts on there has been in a bunch of hardcore bands. And so it's cool to listen to them talk, because some of them are you know, vegan. We're very far left, you know, leaning, so to speak, like if you could put people in categories or whatever. But also, and I say not far left, but like they were considered outcast, as they talk about it, like on patrol. And, you know, guys were like, oh, you don't drink, you don't eat red meat. Like, what do you do? You know, and they're like, well, I read books, I listen to music, and I want to go out there and fight crime. You know, it's like, well, we don't have to butt heads about this, but it's a cool perspective. They just start out. There's two or three shows that are called Punk Rock Cops, and I dig them. So I want to get them on as well so we can talk to them. And then our buddy over at Failure to Stop, Tanzi and them are still pushing their podcast out. And he and Andrea Uplate do a show on Tuesdays, like a live show, and it's true crime. So you actually get to hear her covering these incidents or these crimes, or maybe even just a topic. And then she talks about that. And then Tanzi ends up kind of giving sometimes some comedic relief or some commentary, but he'll also sometimes give the perspective from maybe law enforcement. So if she's talking about crime scene of some true crime incident, he may be able to explain why the crime scene may have been controlled or not controlled or whatever, just for an example. But man, they've brought on this guy, Drew Breezy. And so we've been following him for a little while and messaging back and forth. And this cat is like recently retired from law enforcement, had a pretty high rank, but his perspective is really, really good. And he's been posting videos on Failure to Stop's YouTube channel explaining, like, there's one man that's like a 20-minute video. So I would tell anybody in law enforcement, go watch this video. He talks about the history of why we have search warrants, but then goes into a fictional example he creates, but it explains step by step how you build PC, how you fill out the search warrant, and how you actually execute it. Not the tactics, but the idea behind it. So even an average citizen can watch that 20-minute video and go, oh, now this makes sense. Now I understand these, you know, search warrants and what it means. But that cat, man, has like a voice for radio and is just like outgoing, and I could listen to him talk all day. So I'd love to get them on the show, like as guests. because they're good, man. So it's Fade or Stop Night Shift. It's like live on YouTube on like Tuesday nights at 8, and then it posts under Fade or Stop's all their streaming stuff.
You know what I realized, man? I think we're like 11 or 12 episodes into this adventure. I do not have a radio voice, and I can't collect my thoughts under pressure, so I just kind of ramble all the time.
No, you're good, dude. The best part about it is...
That's my perspective, man.
Now, look, you remember when you became an instructor, and we talked about that. You know, you have to, like, start to listen to yourself and try... Like, I have certain catchphrases I still try to phase out, you know? And it sucks because I was a guest on one podcast and my street name would have been Yeso. That's what they would have called me. If someone heard that, they'd be like, here comes Yeso. Cause you know how it is. Like you get a nickname, like Yeso. And then I go into talking and for 20 minutes I talk. And then they ask me a question like, Yeso. It's just, your brain picks up on that. But.
I used to say right all the time. Right.
Right. Yeah. You do,
I'd
right.
say something and then I would say right. And then you would say it and I'd say right again. So Let me tell you a fun little story, right? One of my best friends asked me to marry him, like stand up and actually do their wedding for him. And I said yes. And okay. It's the one and only wedding I've ever done. And the whole time I said right. And I'd be like, this couple belongs together, right? Like it was a question.
And you're waiting, yeah.
You do take her, right? You do be taking him, right?
Yeah,
dude, it was terrible, man. But yeah, one time I actually I hosted a wedding. Yeah, man, I got people hitched,
and it was completely bootleg because you're not like certified and you're not. I don't know.
They think they're married, so that's all that counts.
Hey, they got love, and that's all that matters, right?
Yeah, right.
Correct.
Right? You guys correct. Are married, right? Right.
Correct.
Okay. Correct.
You ever meet people that? Correct. Correct.
Correct. Correct. Yeah. I'm excited about what we're gonna do moving forward, man.
Hey, real quick. I'm gonna mention one book. I kind of want to work some books in too, man, because I try to post stuff, but man, I've read a lot of books, like a true nerd. But there's a book that's getting released, and it's Matthew Thomas. Are you telling me to hold on or can I keep talking?
No, keep talking, man.
Oh, yeah. Matthew Thomas, deputy one time on Instagram. And for those of you that work the streets, you know what that means. One time, right?
One time.
He has like a really, really cool background. Very similar to ours. And we're going to have him on the show, hopefully, in the next few weeks, if not sooner. But he's got a book that he wrote and just is either launching very soon or has already launched probably by the time this podcast comes out, is called Interceptors. Hold on. Let me back up. Interceptors, because I called it Interceptors, but it's called Interceptors and it should be on Amazon and all the outlets or whatever. It's good, dude. It's good. He has a really cool background, but he has worked cartels on levels in the desert of Arizona. So in the book, he talks about the operations they were doing, the gear they were using, how they had to start switching it up, how they were on the forefront, the very beginning of this experience of cartels working the borders and infiltrating into America. But also this cat has a background that this is what I'll say. He saw four shootings before he was able to drive a car in the neighborhoods he lived in. Yeah. So I don't want to steal his thunder. I'm just saying, go pick up that book. I think it's going to be on like Kindle, hardback, paperback. Like check it out. Matthew Thomas, Interceptors is the book, and his Instagram is Deputy One Time. And dude, if you reach out to him and you're polite and not, you know, a jerk about stuff, he'll answer some questions, man. He's just a good dude. But he's like second in charge of Pinal County, Arizona. With America's Sheriff. So Sheriff Lamb, who has an Instagram account too. Not nice dude, man. Very nice dude. They're just motivated, man. They still in the game and they just want to stop violence, man. That's all they're worried about. So it's good. That's my book endorsement. Ski, you know what the question is going to be.
I already got an answer, man. And I'm going very, very specific today.
Okay.
You're asking about a song recommendation, aren't you?
A song or a band or artist, but yeah, it's going to be music. What is it?
I'm gonna tell everybody listening to mm-hmm. trust me on this, mm-hmm. and you got to crank it up, turn the volume up before you even hit play on this one. But I want mm-hmm. you to go type in Little Richard and listen to the song "Rip It Up," and just okay. tell me if it doesn't get you amped up.
Okay. Hey,
Little Richard, yeah. Rip It Up.
Yeah, you talking to a kid that was raised on Little Richard, right?
Actually, if dude, I'm looking at your hairdo right now, man. Uh-huh. Are you starting to do like a Little Richard hairdo?
Yeah, man. Yeah.
Wow.
I'm gonna tickle the ivories a little bit, man. Yeah. It probably looks more like Jerry Lee Lewis, right?
I don't know, man.
Yeah, I don't either. But I do, I mean, I love like old, like Jerry Lee Lewis, Little Richard, Chuck Berry. You go back and listen to that stuff, like
he wrote that song.
Punk rock was like frantic, just you know, banging on the piano, just getting wild with it, man. Complete,
yeah,
rebel.
Absolutely. I'm a huge fan of that song, Jerry Be Good. I love it. One of my favorites.
Right. Yeah. How about Screaming Jay Hawkins? Do you ever listen to Screaming Jay Hawkins? Go check that out, man. When I was a kid, I heard a little bit. I was like, whoa, what in the world, man? This is wild. So, okay, so you're going with Little Richard.
Little Richard, the specific song, Rip It Up. And okay. I do know it's Johnny B. Good, but it's just funny when you say stupid stuff.
I might have to say a few bands, man, because now that I'm on Spotify, like people laugh and they're like, how have you not been on Spotify? So now that I'm on, man, it's like people would just go, hey, check this band out, check this band out, check this band out. So I was just recently told about Leon Bridges. Have you heard of this cat? Leon
I have.
Bridges.
Yes, I have. Yeah. Absolutely.
So the song that I keep playing over and over and over is called Better Man. And this is a young cat, man. This is like current. But if you play it, I swear you can hear a needle on the record. It sounds like that, like old sound. I can't get enough of it. So I got that. I'm like playing it constantly, right? St. Paul and the Broken Bones. I can never get enough of them. I've got, you know, two or three of their records. You can pick any song, but their records are different. Like one record is like straight up old soul. The one that follows up with that one is almost like old soul meets a little bit of disco, almost a little bit of like late 70s, a little sprinkle, a little dash of funk in there. But St. Paul and the Broken Bones, man, they got a wide variety of sounds, but every song is amazing.
I got one of their vinyls, man.
Yeah, you do. Hey, weren't we were supposed to go see them at some point after the lockdown, I think.
Yeah.
But I can't remember now what happened, but we didn't get to go see them. But I would love to see them live.
Let's do it.
I got three more songs. Sorry, man. My world's wide open on Spotify.
This is 20 more minutes of talk, man.
I know, Just hold on. Deal's Gone Bad, and I may have mentioned them before. Deal's Gone Bad, which is a little bit older, about 10 years ago, Chicago-based band. A little of that ska soul sound. But play Messing Around. The song is called Messing Around. First impression for Deal's Gone Bad, go listen to Messing Around. If you like old soul, but like ska with a little bit of like upbeatness, but ooh, that voice. Then there's Lake Street Drive.
I know.
Call
that very
Off
well.
Your Dogs, man.
Yeah.
There's a song called Call Off Your Dogs. I listened to it three times back to back driving to work the other day. Mm-hmm. Because when I heard it, it immediately was like a convergence of old beach music with like a little bit of that, like a little Motown voice, female voices to sprinkle in there. But then almost like this, I can't even explain it, man. Like that old 70s vibe of like rock. I don't know, man. It's just
You mean like Skynyrd, man?
I mean like the opposite of Skynyrd. Maybe even a little like Blondie. Let's like sprinkle a little bit of Blondie in there, maybe. Female vocals, but man, Lake Street Drive. Call Off Your Dogs. That's the song. The last one I'm going to mention is there's a tattoo artist out in Arizona, Carlos Rubio. I met him in Vegas a couple years ago. This cat is wild. Great artist, disciple tattooing, but I mean like amazing art, but his sound or his taste in music is like a lot of like older, like death metal, thrash. But every now and then, man, like he'll hit me with something and send me a message and say, I know what you like. Check this out. And he sent me one called American Sharks. And the song is Overdrive. And so like fans of like Red Fang and that sort of, you know, like that vibe. Check out American Sharks Overdrive. That's it. Like, he sent that song to me, and I put it on repeat. So that's all I got. Oh, yeah, that's all I got for music. I'll save the rest for the next episode. But for now, that's just a little taste of some good stuff I've been listening to.
Well, that sounds good, man. Well, I'm glad to be back doing this. It's kind of a random hodgepodge episode, and we just kind of rambled. And
yes.
What do you usually say? Yeah. Flapping your gums.
Yeah, flapping my gums, yapping, you know.
Yapping.
Jaw-jacking, right? Whatever. So yeah, man. I'll say this. We're back. We're pushing out episodes. If people want to send us a message and say, hey, you should have this person on the show, hit us at the Disruptors of BC and Ski on Instagram. And also topics. If there's something you want to hear, doesn't have to be law enforcement related. It can be anything from philosophy, lifestyle, history, books, whatever, writers. We didn't even get into a lot of books other than Matt's book. But anything like that, man, we're wide open. And then we're going to have, like I said, guests from bands, podcasts. So obviously there's some other podcasts or guests or bands you want us to listen to. Hit us on the recommendations there. Ski. I miss
yes,
you,
sir.
Buddy.
I miss you too, man.
And like Marcus Torgerson tells us, I love you, man.
Man, I love you too. Big old Marcus.
Too, all right.
The world's most violent hug.
That's right. Here's a hug to you, Ski. Disruptors out.